When you think of African-American political leanings, you think liberal-minded people with a long-standing history of voting for Democrats, right? But what if you're an African-American who subscribes to, quote, conservative values, end quote, and identifies as Republican? Where do you fit in the American political landscape? On this hour of the Keenest Observers, Stanford University sociologist Dr. Corey Fields, author of Black Elephants in the Room, The Unexpected Politics of African-American Republicans, is with us to talk about the challenges of being a political minority in the African-American community and the Republican Party. Thank you for being here, Professor Fields.
Thanks for having me on.
Most definitely, most definitely. So you have a number of dynamics kind of embedded in your title. You know, they're the obvious references to being, you know, the different person in Republican spaces, but definitely also in the Black community, in the perception of us being kind of in a kind of a homogeneous group. What did you find to be unexpected in Black Republican politics, or just the whole dynamic of that embedding?
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely right to call out the sort of, you know, multi-layered theme of the title, right? So one of the sort of interesting aspects of the findings going into the project was the extent to which, you know, African-American Republicans, you spend a lot of time thinking about them vis-a-vis other Black voters, right, and how they're unique relative to what most Blacks are doing. But over the course of doing the project, you know, we forget that there are also minorities within the Republican Party, right? And we don't, that experience tends to get muffled in our conversations around African-American Republicans. So one of the most striking things about the project was sort of the hearing Black Republicans talk about that experience of being Black in what's, you know, essentially a white space, the Republican Party, and the challenges of navigating Black identity in white spaces, which for me resonated in a lot of ways, because I was like, oh, wow, this is a story that, you know, in a lot of ways is quite familiar to many other African Americans, right? The sort of moving through, being Black, but moving through white spaces. But rarely do we think about sort of African American Republicans as an illustration of that. So that, you know, aspect of the Black Republican experience for me doing the project was particularly striking, but also hearing how they, you know, sort of managed being, if you will, the elephant in the room within Black communities, mm-hmm. right? So there was this sort of duality of mm-hmm. what it's like being, you know, to say that they're at the margins of Black spaces and Republican spaces might be a little bit overdramatic, but they certainly think of themselves as being marginalized within both spaces.
Mm-hmm. How many people did you interview, and how long did the project take from idea origin, or I guess idea origination to completion?
Yeah. Oh, God. That's an embarrassing question. I talked to about 50 people. And so I spoke mostly with activists who were sort of involved in political organizing, either within Black political organizations or Republican organizations. And I focused primarily on activists who were engaged in politics at the state and local levels, partly because we have a lot of experience in hearing the stories of sort of, you know, certain very high-profile African-American Republicans. And one of the things I wanted to do was to sort of explore the experience, what's the experience like, not for, you know, the Clarence Thomas or the Ben Carsons, right, but for the people who are sort of day-to-day activists engaged in local politics, state politics, sort of Black Republicans before they become famous. And one of the things I found was that, you know, there is a winnowing effect that happens, that the Black Republicans we see on the news sort of distorts our perceptions of what Black Republicans are like. So I talked to about 50 activists, African-American Republican activists. And I also, you know, did ethnographic observation where I went to events and, you know, functions, rallies, panel conversations, you know, just sort of hanging out, in, if you will. And over the course of, it was about 3 or 4 years of intense data collection, but the project has been ongoing. I started it when I was in graduate school and finished it here at Stanford. So it's been, you know, sort of a long time coming, the project.
Mm-hmm. Who would you say this book is for?
Mm. I would say anyone who is, you know, sort of certainly interested in Black politics, anyone who's interested in sort of Republican politics more broadly within the U.S., but also I think, you know, sort of people who have an interest in understanding sort of social identities like race and how those identities inform our behaviors, like political behavior specifically in the book. But I think there's a broader story about how identity shapes or can shape our understanding of, you know, the world and how we act within it. And like I said earlier, I think, you know, there is also this story of, you know, what it's like to be Black in white spaces. So, you know, there, you know, hopefully a lot of people will find it interesting. But I think, you know, if those particular topics resonate with you, there should be something here for you. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so did you write it because of your particular interest in social identity and Black folks in political spaces, or was it just a part of your particular professional interest?
No, I mean, I think, you know, a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. You know, the motivation of the project, you know, was partly generated by an interest in, you know, people who do things that you don't expect people like them to do, right? This notion of unexpectedness. Because I think with that idea, it sort of plays on our expectations that we associate with social identities like race, right? But also our beliefs around, you know, sort of particular behaviors, what it means. So for me, the project was interesting because it tackled questions around what does it mean to be Black, but also what does it mean to be Republican? And so I'm definitely, my broader intellectual interests sort of revolve around sort of how our identities shape our experiences in the world, right? And sort of how we act in the world, but also how the world acts upon us. And I thought, you know, Black Republicans seemed like a fun and interesting context to explore that. And it was also, you know, a group where there's a lot of sort of popular imagery around them, but we don't actually have a lot of detailed knowledge.
Okay, we'll get back into that, and I'd love to continue that conversation and that point about social identity and expectations.
Yeah.
If you're just joining us, I'm Robert Goodwin. My guest is Dr. Corey Fields, the writer of Black Elephants in the Room, The Unexpected Politics of African-American Republicans. We'll be right back. Back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Robert Goodwin. We're talking about what it is to be a Black Republican in the United States of America. This time I'm with Dr. Corey Fields, author of Black Elephants in the Room, The Unexpected Politics of African-American Republicans. We were talking about and getting into Dr. Fields a little bit of social identity and the expectation of what it may be to be Black and Republican, or the perception of what it is to be Black and maybe not Democrat. Can you tell us what you, I guess, observed and gleaned with divergence from what we think Black political leanings are normally?
Yeah, no, I think one of the interesting aspects and sort of part of the, you know, I guess, unexpectedness, if you will, of African-American Republicans, I was personally surprised at the extent to which they actually saw their politics as being embedded on a broader continuum of, you know, for lack of a better term, pro-Black political behavior, right? Like, they thought of what they were doing as being grounded in a commitment to Black identity, right? And so they, you know, felt like engaging in Republican politics for them was a pathway towards, you know, sort of racial uplift of Blacks as a group. And that certainly isn't how we think about, you know, African-American Republicans, right? It is sort of not what we commonly associate with them, right? The general thinking around black Republicans is that somehow there's an absence of blackness, which is what facilitates them being Republican, right? It's sort of, you know, a black person who'd be a Republican somehow is less black or less committed to black identity than those, you know, African-Americans who are Democrats or more liberal. And so I was actually, you know, really surprised at the extent to which African-American Republicans grounded their partisanship in a commitment to racial uplift for the black community, right? Mm-hmm. Now, this manifests in multiple ways among black Republicans, but they certainly all saw themselves as, you know, engaged in a politics that, you know, on the one hand was sort of meant to lift up black people, but it didn't necessarily entail a focus, an explicit focus on racial identity, right? So there was, you know, some division there on the extent to which African-American Republicans wanted to center their racial identity in their politics. And that was a big split among them. So, yeah, they're definitely, you know, and for me, it highlighted the need to sort of, we have to keep in mind that, you know, figuring out what's best for black people isn't a sort of easy thing, right? Like, black people are a complicated group, but there's not one sort of monolithic idea about who black people are and what they need politically. Mm-hmm. And so what African-American Republicans often are doing is, you know, constructing black people and their interests in such a way that, you know, it's consistent with their support of conservative social policy.
Yeah, I think that was very interesting in your book. One, giving a historical context of what it means to be a member of the Republican Party or the or Republican Party historical foundations post-slavery and Civil War, and how black folks were a part of that grouping to become huge parts of the electorate for the Republican Party and its formation. And then consequently, you know, I know in my history, you know, my family was, you know, you vote for the party of Lincoln.
Right.
But then that changed, given, like, as you say in your book, the switch and change of the political landscape.
Exactly. And so in some ways, you know, and this is something African-American Republicans I talk to would say, you know, it's the Republican Party left black people. Black people didn't leave the Republican Party. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, that's sort of how they, and this is coming from people who are themselves self-identified as black Republicans. Right. Like, there's definitely a sense of thinking that, you know, the party has sort of moved in ways that make it increasingly difficult, that make it, you know, difficult next to impossible to be black and Republican, right? And so, which, you know, in some ways marks a huge reversal historically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think what's interesting about that is our community sometimes, and not categorizing the black community as a monolithic community, but the principles of conservatism tend to be aligned with, you know, black community principles more so than liberal politics sometimes. You know, that is, you know, a reliance on family and actually autonomy and self-determination and a love of God and church. Which
right.
is kind of diametrically opposed to what supposedly liberal leanings are, but we tend to align with liberal.
Right. And so in some ways, you know, in the book I talk about this group of, you know, what I call race-conscious mm-hmm. black Republicans. And, like, that, in what you just articulated, is exactly how they talk about their commitment to conservative principles and why they support the Republican Party, right? That they view, you know, the this notion of self-determination, building up black communities, supporting the family, that these are the things that are best for black people, right? And the best way to achieve that are going to be pro-business policies, pro-family policies, small government, right? When the government gets coded as, you know, white, and the best thing for black people is less white involvement in their lives, right? So smaller government makes sense. This is sort of the logic that, you know, sort of a race-conscious black Republican brings to bear in thinking through these issues. And I think, you know, you make a good point that, you know, that there's probably a lot more ideological political variation among African Americans. The challenge is that the political system as it stands doesn't leave a lot of room for mm-hmm. that expression, mm-hmm. right? So the sort of rich diversity of thought among African Americans can't really manifest in a political system that gives you two choices fundamentally, right? So it's sort of a So the, you know, the what looks like, you know, monolithic support for the Democratic Party is partly a function of available alternatives, right? And so the challenge for African-American Republicans is that even if you believe that, you know, there's this sort of benefit to African-American communities for conservative social policies, there's still the issue of, like, sort of race and racism within the party that you have to struggle with, right? And so, you know, in a lot of ways, it's one thing to say, right, you know, pro-business policies or pro-family policies or small government policies would be good for Black people. But it's another thing when, like, that's being said, but the people who are articulating that are also articulating, you know, deeply anti-Black messages or, like, anti-immigrant messages or anti-Muslim messages, right? Like, sort of messages of exclusion and racism. And so having to, you know, juggle those two aspects of the Republican Party is increasingly difficult. It's not just about the policies, right? It's about how the policies get articulated and who the policies are shaped as being for.
Right. I heard that you were continuing your research. I would love to see how what you found in this body of work has been informed by the 2016 presidential election. But I want to go back to this construction of race blind versus Black consciousness Republicans. And did you find that to be a categorization that naturally emerged? Or, again, to your point, like there is this kind of continuum of thought that kind of merges or spans between the two. Did you find that the people that you talked to just automatically kind of were in one of two camps?
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways they were, right? And so, you know, I found that African-American Republican activists were either, you know, you call sort of this race-blind camp where, you know, it's not that there's a rejection of their Black identity. It's like they, you know, I think the one interesting way to think about it is they think of themselves as, like, culturally Black, but not politically Black, right? And so it's like, well, being Black informs, you know, the kind of church I want to go to, the kind of neighborhood I want to live in, but when it comes to tax policy, like, I don't think, you know, a race-blind Black Republican would say, oh, I don't really see my race as informing how I think about what's the best tax policy or what's the best immigration policy, right? And you can contrast that perspective with the sort of race-conscious African-American Republicans who would say, yeah, I'm culturally Black, but I'm also politically Black, right? So being Black shapes these sort of, like, cultural lifestyle elements, but it also shapes how I see the world and how I understand the world politically. And so I make, you know, decisions get made through the lens of thinking about race and racial discrimination, right, and how that informs the Black experience. And so there is a difference. That's an important difference between these two groups of people. It affects, you know, how they think about and talk about Republican policies, but it also affects their ability to work with white Republicans and their ability to work with one another. And so it's, you know, and I think, you know, that variation that I see among African-American Republicans, I think it's fair to say it's probably also present among African-Americans more broadly, right? Like, all Black people don't think the same way about being Black, right? And what I want to do with the book is to call attention to that point and say that, you know, we need to, it's not enough to know, are you Black? Yes, no. You also have to understand, what does being Black mean to you?
I'm talking to Dr. Corey Fields, who's an assistant professor in the Department of Sociology at Stanford University and the author of Black Elephants in the Room, The Unexpected Politics of African-American Republicans. I think that last point that you just made is incredibly interesting. It was really, I'll admit, my own political leanings and maybe even cultural leanings, challenging to hear the divergence between being culturally Black and not politically Black. And I didn't understand how I still don't at nice gray in my beard age, you know, I don't understand how those can diverge. And what do you think allows folk to diverge that social identity or just conceptualize social identity in that particular way? And then what does that mean in terms of what they do in their political lives or their lives in terms of action in the community.
Mm-hmm. I mean, well, you can think of, you know, sort of multiple reasons why that kind of splintering might happen for the colorblind Black Republicans, right? Like, it could be, you know, it could be simply pragmatic, right? That you could say, okay, look, folks are not going to be supportive of policies if they think those policies are designed for Black people. So, like, let's not talk about them in terms of race. Let's just talk about them neutrally, right, in terms of class or something, right? And so it's like a way of, you know, gaining support for what you want to do, because it's like, well, if you pitch it as being pro-Black, then non-Black people are going to resist it. Right. And so that's sort of just a purely instrumental motivation that might be operating. But you could also imagine that, you know, sort of different life experiences, right? If you have lived a life where you don't feel like being Black has inhibited your personal advancement, right, it might not sort of resonate with you that, you know, it's, you know, the challenges of sort of racism and discrimination and the need to politicize that experience might not resonate with you because it's not your lived experience, mm-hmm. right? Like, you don't feel like race has held you back in terms of life opportunities and life chances. And then, you know, a third perspective might just say, like, look, racism is going to be there, and that's just the Black experience in America, and you can focus on that, or you could sort of work around it, right? And that, so I mean, I think there are like multiple sort of pathways that sort of split up this, like, that can, you know, can lead to this sort of culturally Black but not politically Black. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if there's one exclusive way that, like, people end up that way, but you can see it, you know, manifesting across the political aisle, right? I mean, I think it's not, I mean, I don't think it would be sort of a radical suggestion to say that politicians like Barack Obama, like Black politicians on the left, also do a similar kind of dance, right, of sort of being, you know, culturally Black, but not too sort of like politically Black, right? And I think you sort of see that in, you know, Barack Obama. He's like not, you know, sort of a Jesse Jackson kind of Black politician, but he's Black, right?
Right, right, right. In fairness, then, the race consciousness conservative member then has another interesting challenge, which is working in that in the construct of race in a space that may not be the most conducive.
Exactly, and that is in some ways probably the, you know, not, well, God, I don't want to say unsung challenge, because I think that sort of maybe needlessly valorizes the group. But that is a big challenge, right? So a big challenge for all Black Republicans is convincing people that, you know, Black and Republican can go together. But one of the, and like I said earlier, we, you know, spend a lot of time thinking about the flack that Black Republicans get from other Black people. We don't spend a lot of time thinking about the flack that they get from white Republicans, right? So a central challenge for Black Republicans is allaying the concerns and anxieties of their white Republican counterparts, right? So white Republicans, you know, they want they want diversity within the party. They want representation, right? But there's this sort of anxiety that Black Republicans are going to put race first, mm-hmm. right? And that, like, can you trust them, right? And if you think back to, you know, 2008 when Colin Powell endorsed Barack Obama and the response that was sort of like, oh, see, this is what we told you. He's putting race first, right? Like, this is a racial loyalty move. That kind of, you know, in the book I call it the skeptical embrace, right? It's mm-hmm. like white Republicans want Black people around, but there's this anxiety that they're going to put race first, right? And this forces African-American Republicans to respond to that, right? Like, they have to sort of, you know, combine Blackness and Republicanness in a way that doesn't trigger the anxieties of white Republicans. And race-conscious Black Republicans in particular, this is a challenge, right? Because what they're sort of doing is saying, you know, Black power through conservative principles, right? And that is certainly foregrounding Black identity. And so they have very, very, like, contentious relations with their white Republican counterparts, right? The activists I talked to spoke about, you know, struggling with trying to reconcile their commitment to racial advancement and explicit racial advancement with the anxieties of white Republicans, right? So this is, you know, there's a real challenge in being, you know, race conscious and conservative within the Republican Party, because, you know, that's inconsistent with how white Republicans want black Republicans to talk about being black, right? Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, this sort of this like almost inception like folding in on itself, right? It's not just, the story isn't just about how black Republicans want to talk about blackness. You also have to take into account how white Republicans want them to talk about blackness.
Right. I love how you called it legibility in the book, and the idea of linking identity to politics and making it natural that black and Republican go together.
Exactly. And then, you know, and there's like, and you can think about, you know, the colorblind and the race conscious approach. It's two different ways of making, you know, it's legible, making blackness and Republicanness legible. And the colorblind approach has a much greater success rate with white Republicans, right? And that matters because white Republicans are the ones who provide the platform and the pathways for African-American Republicans to be successful and to get attention and, you know, get resources, right? And so, you know, when Fox News needs a black Republican, they call the guy who says race doesn't matter, not the guy who says black power through conservative principle.
Right.
And so that comes to fundamentally shape our perceptions of what it means to be black and Republican, consequently.
Great. Yes, exactly. It does. I'm Robert Goodwin. Our guest is Dr. Corey Fields, who is the author of Black Elephants in the Room, The Unexpected Politics of African American Republicans. We'll take a call on the backside, but first a break. We're back with the final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Robert Goodwin, hosting our guest, Dr. Corey D. Fields, and we're talking about what it is to be a black Republican in America. You're welcome to join the conversation. The number is 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. I'm going to take a call. Connie, you're on the air.
If there is a difference in politics from some of the new black immigrants to the United States over the last several decades, I know that at least in the East and South, there are huge numbers, hundreds of thousands of persons who have come from particularly the Caribbean, but also from South America, and then there are Africans who have emigrated to America as well. And I know they run the full range from field workers to highly paid professionals, and so I wondered if these new people who, if they identify as black Americans, how they vote and what their politics are like. Thank you.
Yeah, no, Connie, that's a great question. So I should say at the upfront, like, I was specifically focused on people sort of who identified themselves as like native-born African Americans, right? And so in the book, I don't really speak much to the sort of black immigrant experience, but I think that is an important point to keep in mind that, like, you know, increasingly the black experience is being informed by immigration, right? That sort of all people who sort of fall under the umbrella of black don't have the same historical experiences within the United States. And that does inform their sort of political behavior and political attitudes. So I think, you know, the research generally shows that, you know, initially there are sort of stark differences between native-born blacks and immigrant blacks, but over time there's a convergence, and that black immigrants start to sort of look and think and feel increasingly very similar to native-born blacks. But it is the case that, you know, if you look at some survey data, that blacks who are immigrants are more likely to express like conservative opinions and conservative attitudes than native-born blacks. So that's an important difference that's worth noting. And I think, you know, one that, you know, is only going to increase over time. And I think, you know, it does make sense, and I definitely would support this idea of thinking about, you know, immigration as being an important source of variation in the black experience in the United States and paying attention to that. And so this gets back to the point earlier of you can't just assume that all people who are black feel the same way about being black, right, and have had the same sort of experiences.
Yeah, I know you talk about the, I think it's the 2008 representative class nationally that had race-blind representatives voted, and there was a Haitian representative from Utah, that woman that, you know, said that she was very focused on making it clear that she got her seat through merit versus, you know, the color of her skin.
Right, Mia Love, yeah, in Utah. Yeah, no, definitely. And so, you know, I think, you know, in some ways it's interesting because a lot of black immigrants, like, they come from the sort of sending country experience is very different in regards to racial dynamics, right? And so their perception of themselves, right, like, is fundamentally different in their understanding of their sort of place in U.S. society, and the role of race and sort of, you know, their experience is very different.
Mm-hmm. To that point, one of the things that hit me as I was reading your book, Dr. Fields, is the idea that the African American identity is constructed by what it is to be African American in America, without the connection to maybe the cultural connection that is the African part of the African American, like West African, or like if you're from the Caribbean and you immigrate, there's a particular kind of either ethnic or tribal connection that has a set of social mores and rules that go along with what you then process as your political responsibility. But it was very interesting when it came down to both groups, either the race conscious folk or the race blind folk working together, there wasn't a sense of community, which is actually kind of explicit in some of those traditions within the African diaspora, for that community is a part of how you work with each other. But it was interesting to hear your research say, well, when it came down to working together in collaboration to go and spread the good word of conservatism, it was challenging. I wondered if my construction of what I read was accurate or is accurate.
No, well, yeah, definitely this notion of the challenge that African-American Republicans have working together is certainly accurate, right? That this sort of race-blind, race-conscious divide was difficult to overcome, right? Partly because it shaped, you know, it's difficult to form organizations when you have fundamentally different ideas about what needs to be done, mm-hmm. right? And so I think, yeah, they're definitely there is a real struggle that African American Republicans have in terms of working together. Like, part of it is because there are really different definitions of, you know, what black people need politically are present among both groups. And that makes it, you know, that produces a struggle in terms of, like, how do we organize? And so it comes down to very, like, sort of big questions of, like, you know, who should this group be targeting, right? And who is our message for? To little things like, what do we put on the flyer? You know, like, there's sort of, from top to bottom, when there's disagreement about the role that, you know, sort of race and racism and discrimination play in black people's lives, right? It's tough to resolve that and make a functioning organization. But I think the other point you mentioned in terms of, like, constructing black people and black people's problems and how that is very much, you know, sort of like U.S. focused, and there isn't this sort of diasporic conception of blackness, right? I think, yeah, both groups, even though they have very different ideas about who black people are, there is a similar kind of narrowness, right? It's either the colorblind people, you know, sort of talk about black pathology, whereas the, you know, race-conscious people talk about black respectability. And even though there's sort of, those are very different narratives about black people, both are sort of flat and two-dimensional, right, mm-hmm. and not complicated. And I think, you know, both groups, in a lot of ways, sort of talk about blackness in a way that's, for lack of a better term, straightforward and simplistic, right? And so, the point that you note, that there isn't this sort of expansive or more complicated notion of like who black people are and what it means to be black, right, is present among both groups, even though they have very different manifestations.
Can you tell me what you mean when you say black pathology versus black respectability? I don't know if it's versus, but can you define those terms?
Yeah, definitely. So the colorblind folks, when they talk about black people, like they tend to focus on, you know, sort of this image of, you know, sort of like blacks as a fallen people, right? Mm-hmm. There's this idea that, you know, black people used to work hard and in the face of discrimination, and, you know, we lived in, you know, segregated communities, but, you know, doctors lived next door to garbage men, and everybody in the community helped one another, and, you know, despite all the challenges, we worked hard and relied on family values and, like, you know, to overcome, but we aren't like that anymore. And now we have, you know, the families are broken apart, people aren't working, people aren't willing to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, they're looking for like a handout, right? You know, this sort of like standard kind of culture of poverty sort of narrative, right? And for those colorblind African American Republicans, when you construct black people that way, the best thing for black people are colorblind social policies, right? Like, black people need to stop talking about race, need to stop talking about racism, and they need to get themselves together, right? Like, that's the message. Now, we can contrast that with this sort of respectability narrative that animates race-conscious African-American Republicans. And under that narrative, black people are as hardworking and diligent and have the same values as everybody else, right? It's not that black people don't want to succeed and don't want to try. They do. It's just that black people have to wrestle with racism and discrimination, right? And that, like, there's a focus on these external forces that are limiting black potential and black possibility. Right. And when, you know, race conscious African-American Republicans construct black people in that way, when they talk about black people like that, the best thing for black people are policies that are going to allow the black community to sort of, you know, circle its wagons and pull itself up. Right. And so the thinking being, we have to look out for ourselves because nobody else is going to do it. Right. The existence of racism and discrimination is like a perfect illustration of like we have to help ourselves. And the best way to do that is like, you know, pro-business policies, pro-family policies, small government. Right. Like and so, like I said, it's like both groups get to the same policy positions, but they get there through very different pathways, right, through very different ideas around, you know, sort of what is it that black people need.
In that vein, framing those constructs within the 2016 election, and maybe what you've continued to do, drawing the threads from your book, how have you seen those two groups, the race conscious and race blind groups, react to the Trump election?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, in some ways, it's an interesting dynamic in the Trump campaign, especially in how it talked about issues relating to African-American communities, right, and its efforts at outreach to black communities. Certainly, I don't know, in some ways tried to sort of play both ends against the middle, right, if you will, right? It sort of drew from the rhetorics of both camps. Certainly throughout the campaign, a number of African-American Republicans I had talked to over the course of doing this research got, you know, contacted me, and we sort of, you know, talked about it. And they were definitely not feeling, you know, the sort of invocation of racist rhetoric against, you know, Latinos. They were not feeling the exclusionary tone of the Trump campaign, right? And that, I think, you know, like a lot of moderate Republicans, they sort of were like, not it. Like, they weren't supportive of that, right? But one of the interesting things about the Trump campaign, especially towards the end, after the campaign had sort of been increasingly called to the mat about, you know, its sort of racist rhetoric, there was this, you know, attempt to invoke this idea that voting for Republican, voting for Trump would be good for blacks as blacks, right? This sort of what do you have to lose message of the Trump campaign, right? And granted, even that message itself was, you know, supported by this notion of black communities being so, you know, devastated and torn apart that there's absolutely like, what do you have to lose? How much worse can it get, right? Which in itself is undergirded by a very sort of, you know, particular image of what it's like to live in black communities that I think, you know, a lot of people not unreasonably found, like, misrepresented their experiences. So I don't actually think that, you know, there was, you know, particularly strong support among African-American Republicans for Trump. But I think similarly, what's always been the case, right, is that, you know, black Republicans who, you know, articulated a message that mirrored the candidate found success, right? And so, you know, if you look at the speakers at the Republican National Convention, right, Ben Carson, right, the folks who are getting love from Trump are the folks who sound like Trump, right? And so I think what will be interesting is to see in the aftermath of the election, right? I think there probably will be effort, and not just with black Republicans, but with, you know, Latinos, with women, maybe even with LGBT folks, right? I think the Trump administration is probably going to be attuned to, you know, I guess, I don't know, I don't want to say like making up for its racist rhetoric by, you know, making some high profile appointments, right? To sort of, diversifying the look, the face of the administration. I mean, but at the same time that, you know, the administration is going to have to balance that with, you know, not worrying, you know, the white people that they appeal to with these messages, you know. So it's definitely going to be a struggle.
Sorry to cut you off, and we could talk about this forever, and I would love to continue the conversation. I want to thank you for being here, Dr. Fields.